So here's an adventure activity that scares the pants off many of us, skydiving. Our Monday expert today is Paul Jeune, who is a skydiving instructor. He trains people to become instructors themselves, and he's one of the subjects of a new TV show on the course he runs and the students that go through it. It's called High School. It's a good name, right? And it's soon to screen on TVNZ On Demand. Here's a bit of a trailer for the show.
The students will have to learn fast in one of the most hostile environments imaginable. Make a mistake, and they'll pay with their lives.
Flat!
You'd have made that mistake 20 feet lower, we'd have been scraping you up off the floor now.
These guys have no idea what they've let themselves in for.
Right, the voice you heard there is Paul Jeune himself, and he's with us in our Auckland studio. Hi.
How are you?
Nice to see you. I'm great, thank you. Gee, you can really ramp up the tension there. Yeah, I don't know if I'd want you on my shoulder. I'm about to jump out of a plane.
She gets pretty exciting sometimes.
Yeah. Hey, bring that microphone nice and close to you if you can. Cool. That'll help. How's you. That? Beautiful. And so we're inviting our audience to send in any questions that you might have about skydiving to... I've just forgotten the text number. Someone's written it down as a typo here, and I can't remember it. What is it? It's 2101. There we go. 2101. My God, I must say that 150 times a day. 2101. Or you can email to jesse@radionz.co.nz. So how did you get into skydiving?
Short version is I wanted a career change. I was big into fitness in the UK and got burnt out. Googled skydiving, found a course in New Zealand, and it's the course that I now teach. It was previously, before it was in Auckland, it was down south in Methven. So I rung them up and they said, yeah, you can do it and you can do it as a job. So cool. So pack my bags and come on out. And 11 years later, I'm teaching it.
Is it weird that you have to travel halfway around the world to learn something that you could presumably learn anywhere?
You've been to the UK, so the weather's not the greatest in the UK. But look, it's different in New Zealand. Skydiving is much more of a business in New Zealand than anywhere else in the world. A lot of places in the world, it's a sport, whereas over here, there's a lot of tandem skydiving. So to get a job in the industry, this is kind of like the mecca.
Mm. And is it because so many people are arriving in New Zealand looking for adventure?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The amount of people coming in. People say they've skydived. They ultimately want to say they've done it in New Zealand, and they probably want to say they've done it somewhere, you know, quite scenic in New Zealand as well, you know, like a Queenstown or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So do you remember that moment when you showed up here in New Zealand?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same as when the guys check in on this course. I felt the exact same way that those guys did when I checked in. And it's a nerve-wracking feeling.
So tell us about your first jump.
So I did my first one years ago in my early 20s in Australia as a tourist, as everyone does. And then went back to the UK, didn't think anything of it. And then when I wanted a career change, I always remember doing a skydive and thinking, it was pretty legit. And like I say, that led me on the path to do this.
So... And what do you remember about that first jump?
Horrifying. Horrifying, honestly.
Before, during, and after?
Before.
Yeah.
This is like, skydiving is something where you describe the anticipation's far worse than the event. You think it's going to go a certain way, and it doesn't go that way. Like, you think it's going to be like the way that you imagine it's going to be. And people say, like, what's skydiving like? You say, well, it's like skydiving. They say, I could never do that. I've done a bungee jump. Well, it's nothing like a bungee jump. You know, there's nothing like anything apart from what it's like, and people think it's going to be a certain way. It's just not.
Is it the same for everyone, though?
Yeah, you generally have that thing where the second before people exit the aircraft, you've got two looks. If you're outside taking pictures of them, you've got the look of absolute paralyzing fear when they're in the door of the plane.
Everyone.
I'm talking about specifically like tandem skydiving now.
Because I was just thinking like a psychopath who doesn't really register emotion. Have you ever run into someone
I've actually taught one. So yeah. And still got pretty scared.
Still,
he was more of a sociopath, but still got pretty scared.
Did you diagnose him on the way up?
Yeah, we had the conversation about it prior. We'd actually had the conversation.
Well, he's a self-aware sociopath.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to tell me that story. What did he say to you?
He just kind of said, I'm usually taking some medication and, yeah, I'm not taking that now. So just to let you know, these are the tendencies. I was like, okay, roger that. Yeah, noted. And
he was maybe just looking to feel something.
Something, yeah. He definitely did. Yeah, he definitely did.
Someone wants to know, what's the youngest age you can skydive?
No age limit in New Zealand. So for a tandem skydive where you're strapped to an instructor, you could take a newborn baby if it was big enough. So it's a question of size. It's if they can fit in the harness or not. The youngest that I've seen go is 5, and the eldest is 101.
You'd have to worry a little bit about consent for a 5-year-old, right?
I mean, yeah, so this is a pretty, it's kind of quite an hot topic, this, around the instructors, where when I don't do tandems anymore, I just purely do student training. When I used to do tandems, I kind of cut my age limit of 14 because I was just under the impression that, like, the way I describe it, if I said to my 6-year-old, there's a, the next doors have just got a velociraptor, do you want to go play with it? He would say, yeah, absolutely. He doesn't know he's going to get tore to death. He doesn't know. The kid doesn't know. It's generally an overzealous parent that's behind us driving.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're showing some responsibility.
Yeah.
Mind you, it must be hard because with so many different operators out there, you know someone's going to give that newborn baby a toss out the plane. It'll
get headlines.
Yeah. Somebody else, I'm going to ask this carefully and I'd like you to answer it carefully. Do people ever lose control of their functions while skydiving?
Yep. I'll just say, yep, absolutely.
Is it common?
It's not common.
No.
It's not common. It's not common. But in terms of, how should we say it, things coming out, the most common thing you're going to see is people spewing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. When the parachutes open and they're flying down on the canopy. Because if they get like a motion sickness type thing, if they're prone to that, then that's more common than anything else.
This is great. Jesse, I've just tuned in. That skydiving dude has a great voice. Where's your accent from?
Manchester.
Okay, great. Red or blue?
Not cricket and rugby.
All right. Yeah. Bruce says, hi, Jesse. Over 40 years ago, on my second jump, I was caught in a eucalyptus tree for 3 hours, and the local fire brigade got me down. It was quite an adventure. Has that ever happened? You ever see that?
Yeah, I've seen some stuff where people get caught up on a few things, landing creeks or rivers or streams and bogs and that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's it's not common, but it's definitely, you know, as long as they don't get injured, it's quite a funny situation.
Now, do you know how many jumps you've done?
Just over 7,500, just coming up to 8,000.
Okay. Yeah. How many do you need to do before it starts getting used to it, I suppose?
So I'd use the guys on the course that I teach as an example. They do 170 jumps with us, and it's normally around the 100 jump mark where there starts to be a point where the science meets the art. Mm. You know, they start to actually be able to express without that, I don't want to say that rigid tension fear face, but they start to become a lot more relaxed around the 100 jump mark.
That's a lot of jumps.
Yeah, and they do it with us. They do it in a really short space of time. So they do 170 jumps in 5 months, and so it's a really immersive form of learning. And they do 200 jumps in the total 8-month course that we teach.
Okay, does that work out about one every weekday, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But when you're in the industry, about 1,000 a year is kind of like the benchmark for when you're working in the industry.
Someone wants to know if their disabled father can skydive. They haven't given any notes as to the disability.
Completely depends on disability. The advice that I give in that situation is contact your local drop zone, explain the situation to them. That's a case by case. They will make the call completely based on the facilities they have.
So, should we talk about a skydive, like a dive?
Yeah.
How do you prepare someone?
Right, so I'm going to talk now for the instructional side of things. So you came to me and you wanted to learn to skydive. So this is not what I call a Disney World tandem, which is watch the video, they'll clip you onto the instructor, you exit the aircraft. So the preparation that we do is we take a full week-long immersive ground school where we'll prep guys for everything from flying the parachute to body position. We'll do a lot of simulations on the ground. We do a lot of stress inoculation, so we're kind of putting people in uncomfortable situations, because the one guarantee that I'll make is that it's the most stressful thing you'll ever do in the civilian sector. There's nothing that's going to put more stress on you than...
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, in terms of performance pressure, in terms of what you've got to do.
Mental stress?
Yeah, huge. Because we're asking people that most people that learn to do it are at a time of their lives where they don't take new information well. So, you know, we're not kids anymore, so the brain's not soaking the new information up. Plus, we don't want to fail. And if we do fail, we don't want to let anyone see us try it again. So you're asking people at a time of their lives that won't take new information well to put in brand new information that they've learned in a short space of time into action in the most exposed body position there is, in the most hostile learning environment there is, in 45 seconds. Like, there's nothing harder. There's nothing harder.
Because I suppose all of human evolution has been geared towards teaching your brain that if you're falling like that, you're going to die.
Yeah, completely. Completely. So that's what we trained. Skydiving itself is relatively easy. Like, literally a potato could do it if it had arms, legs and head. So if you can put your hips forward and put your head back, you can skydive. But you have to overcome that primal human nature that says, I shouldn't be doing this. And that's the specialist skill set involved in doing the job that we do.
Mm. Do you do any sort of interview at the start? We'll get back to the prep for the jump in a moment. But when you first sit down that class of people and sort of to work out whether everyone's got the right sort of personality?
100%. 100%. So before guys sign up on our course, we do an interview that we like to do in person, but we get applicants from all over the world. So we'll usually do that on a video call. And we're trying to assess. I'm looking for red flags. So believe it or not, the worst people that we could take, the people that we really want to avoid, are the ones that describe themselves as adrenaline junkies and this kind of stuff. It's like, well, that's not, we want professionals. We want people that understand what it is they're going to be doing and are going to be able to perform at a high level and execute at a high level. We're not looking for people that that really want to be significant or do anything to achieve that. We're not looking for people that don't have a value of their own lives. I mean, what we do is absolute risk mitigation to the highest.
Right, you don't want risk takers.
No, absolutely not.
You don't want people who enjoy the feeling of being on the edge.
We don't want people who think they enjoy the feeling of being on the edge. And there's a big difference in that. Big difference.
Have you ever had someone that you haven't realised until too late that they were that sort of person? You thought, oh, heck, what am I going to do with this one?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we put measures in place with the course that I teach. We put measures in place for that if we find that this is going to be a safety violation, then, you know, we are within our right and power to stop that person, you know, from moving ahead and saying that this is not the right institute for you to learn at.
Have you ever had that chat with someone?
Absolutely.
How'd it go?
All right. I don't mind the awkward conversation. So, yeah, it went all right. Yeah.
You're a good man to be doing this job.
I think so.
You found your calling.
For me, this is, the way I describe it, it's leadership training. You're trying to take a group of people. I mean, the only way, if you saw some of the people on the courses that we teach, the only thing that would link them together, you'd say, like, is this a religious cult? There's nothing that puts them together. It's just, you know, there's just the most eclectic bunch of people. So they've got to understand what it is that they've signed up to do. And I think we found a very, very good way to be able to do that in the teaching that we do, you know, by training the person and looking at human nature and trying to take all these people from different backgrounds and turn them into leaders so they can lead their self and their team and make amazing decisions in stressful situations.
I wonder if what they might have in common is what you had, which is just sort of wanting a bit more out of life, not having quite found their calling yet.
I think the drive to be better. So I'd kind of say there's two, let's look at age groups. There's kind of two that we attract. There's the just left high school, kind of 18, 19, don't really know what to do. And then there's the mid to late 20s that have done the grind, dug the holes, done all that kind of stuff, and they just want a better life.
Mm.
That's where I was at.
Okay, let's get back to this jump then.
Mm.
So you're teaching me, you're giving me the talk.
Yeah.
The talk you just gave me about what to expect from it.
Yep.
And then physically, what are we doing?
Physically, we'd put you in, we'd run through some evolutions, and one of the big ones that we do is a thing called a hanging harness. Now, you will see that on the trailer for the TV show, where we simulate a malfunction, one of people's biggest kind of, oh, what if, you know, it's that, this is the most ridiculous question ever, what if the parachute doesn't open?
That's not a ridiculous question.
But it's like, what do you
it's
think?
It's a really sensible question.
Now, look, back in the day when, you know, skydiving started, then that was a legitimate fear because the gear wasn't good.
Mm.
The gear is flawless.
There've been improvements.
Oh, like cars, you know, it's pilot error that makes a problem. But let's just say we talk about a malfunction, which is technically, let's say this, when the parachute doesn't open, it happens about one in every 800 jumps. So we have to train people for that. You take two parachutes, main parachute, reserve parachute, and we put people into a very stressful situation of being able to get rid of the main parachute and open the reserve parachute. And that's real kind of like make or break to say whether they can or can't skydive, because there's a series of things they need to do in sequence, and if they don't do that, they can't skydive.
Mm-hmm. Steve in Whanganui wants to know, do you still have the dreams where you wake up with a fright thinking you're falling?
Steve, good question. So I've not had anything like that for many, many years, but I'll tell you, I did have a recurring dream. This was years ago, it was when I was still doing tandems. And we talk about a bad situation is what we call a two-out, where both parachutes open at the same time. And I had a recurring dream for the best part of a year, literally every night, of a two-out on a tandem. Mm. So, yeah. And it just never
happened. It happens. You have those stress dreams about whatever job you have, I suppose, and yours just happens to be set in a parachute school.
Yeah.
Vicky has sent me an email and says, as a midwife, I can vouch that childbirth is harder. You couldn't have a more vulnerable or exposed body position. Plus, in a setting of extreme pain, sometimes you have to guide a woman to learn and do an unexpected thing in less than 45 seconds.
I'm not going to argue with that, Vicky.
Yeah, good move.
I'm not going to argue with that. Good I think move. the only thing harder than childbirth's maybe man flu. But other than that, no, don't say that, Vicky.
You were doing so well.
Joke.
Okay. So let's put this parachute in the backpack then. How are we doing that?
Yeah, so we teach our guys to pack before they jump, so they do their first skydive on their own pack job, which is it's quite a nerve-wracking thing. Yeah, it's a nerve-wracking thing for a lot of them.
I'd want to say, Paul, you just do my first one and then I'll do it after that.
I'll do it after that. Yeah, right. Yeah, look, we teach these guys well and, you know, they put that whole thing on. We run through some kind of evolutions then of what the jump's going to go like, and then it kind of escalates where this is now where the heart rate starts spiking, where we're walking them out to the aircraft, the heart rate elevates a little bit, then the aircraft starts, then it starts to spike, then they get on the aircraft, and then the aircraft takes off. And the big thing that we're trying to get them to do is control that dump of adrenaline. Mm. It's like, you know, we always kind of say, like, don't peak, don't blow out at this point in time, because you've got to save something for when you actually get out the door. And it can make very rational people very, very irrational. So we're just trying to deal with things in quite a methodic way. You know, we're trying to keep them calm. I always kind of say you're half instructor and half the psychotherapist.
Yeah. I'm just throwing in questions as we get them, please, from our audience. Mike says, do people ever have an epiphany and find God after a jump?
Look, there's a lot of people that I'm definitely not the kind of person that gets on board with that kind of thing. There's a lot of people that say, oh, I did the skydive and you know, it has changed my life, and it's, you know, I'm sat on top of a mountain in a lotus position. It's not really my jam, that. It's a really, really enjoyable thing once you've got over the initial fear. You're performing at a high level. You're doing something that the general populace aren't doing. And there's a lot of people that go down that epiphany route, but I'm kind of quite different in that sense, where I'm quite null and void to skydiving. I do it because it's high performance coaching in a real pressured environment. I don't really get anything from the skydive itself.
But you sometimes see it in people.
Oh, massively. Massively. Yeah. And then, you know, the next time you see
it's a new perspective on the world, isn't it?
The next time you see them, they come in and they've got earrings and nose rings and dreadlocks and, you know, all this kind of stuff, and they're wearing
Trastafarian.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got their hippie pants on and that kind of thing. So, you know, they.
I'm speaking with, if you've just tuned in, it's our Monday experts, and today it's Paul Jeune, who's a skydiving instructor, and he is the star of a new show called High School, which is going to screen soon on TVNZ On Demand. When's it going to screen?
So it airs this Friday. There's three episodes that come out this Friday, so it's an eight-part series. The first three episodes come out this Friday, and then there's going to be an episode every week, and it's on demand.
Okay. Have you seen yourself on screen yet?
Yeah.
Any surprises?
No, not really. And this is what I'd say. The best compliment that I can give, because this is a observational documentary. This is really not reality TV in any way, shape or form. And the best compliment that I can give to the people that have been behind this is, if someone said to me, what's the course like, I'd say watch the show. It's exactly how it's taught, and it's exactly how the emotions the students go through, you know.
Strength and fitness part of it,
it helps like anything, you know. Anyone, even a top Wall Street trader, would be better if he could triple body weight deadlift, you know. He'd be better if he was fit, he'd be better if he could run a 4 minute mile. You don't need to be. It's not a prereq. You are better if you're in better shape. I think you're better in life if you're in better shape.
Yeah, you know. Probably true. Okay, so you're on this plane and you're heading up.
So we're trying to calm people down specifically at that point when they're on the aircraft. And we're just trying to distract them. You know, what did you have for dinner last night? We're talking about everyday things, looking out the window. We're trying to, like, they want to be overamped. We're trying to just dial them back and create some normality in the situation.
Is it easier or harder to make someone laugh with a gag, with a joke, when they're on their way up? Is it like, are they tense so they can't laugh, or are they nervous so they're, like, more likely to laugh?
There's a little bit of both in there, you know. There's definitely a little bit of both. But my kind of thing with this is relationships are everything. You can get them to perform at a super high level if there's a mutual level of trust. So much of the pre-training that I do with people is involved in creating that level of trust. Like in any organisation, you know, and I keep coming back to the leadership thing, but if there's trust, you're going to get a lot more output from this person. So you're taking them into a really, really harsh environment. They've got to believe that you've got them covered. That's what we're trying to do. So if we're honest with our conversations with them, you know, and if we're coming across as being sincere, which we are, then we can usually do a great job of getting that student on board and getting that student to kind of do what we need them to do.
Have you ever got as far as the plane mid-air and decided, no, this person's not jumping today?
Yes, absolutely.
Tell me.
Absolutely. So you've got a couple of reasons for that. There's the obvious kind of weather situation. So we're monitoring weather all the time. And for student training, our big enemy is the wind. If the wind gets too strong for students, we just can't allow them to jump. So we've got people on the ground that if the wind picks up to a certain level, they radio the aircraft and we stand those people down, so on and so forth. But there's been a couple of situations where you can tell if we get out this aircraft, like we are setting this person up for failure. So why get out the aircraft?
Mm.
Like this person is not, this 45 seconds and the following 6 minutes on the canopy is not going to go how we want it to go. And we're going to ingrain really, really bad behaviour in this person by doing that. We're going to create what should be a good situation and we're going to ingrain some stress and some fear and panic in that person. That's not going to be a good outcome.
Liam says, my father was a Spitfire pilot during the war and he could never understand skydiving. Jumping out of a perfectly good plane, he didn't...
Well, I think that's across the board with pilots. So if you... There's only a few pilots that I know that jump. One of the best is still a current Air New Zealand pilot and he's a great skydiver. He's finished skydiving now, but he's a great skydiver. But there's very, very few pilots that will skydive. And it's the same thing when you ask a skydiver. Sometimes we have to land with the aircraft. Given the choice, we'll always get out. So a skydiver doesn't want to land with a plane. And a pilot doesn't want to be on the parachute. It's completely counterintuitive to what you've learned.
Okay. I think I interrupted you. So you said sometimes you will turn back if the weather's not good. But what about an individual person? Do you ever get a vibe off them and think?
Yeah. So as I was saying there, I've had a couple of people where you know based on how this person is, you know on the language they're putting out, you know on everything that they're doing, that this is not going to go well. Like, we're going out hoping it's going to go well, and hope is not a tactic. Like, you cannot take that to the bank. So we've got to stack the deck in our favour, stack the deck in the students' favour. We're going out to win, and we're going out to win. And if we know that the loss is inevitable, if we know that the losses are 51%, like, we're not going to do that.
Kathy says she would like us to more often refer to she or her. She's a 63-year-old who has skydived a few times.
Oh, nice. Excellent. Congratulations.
In the time between jumping out and touching ground, how much is analytical and how much is blissful non-thinking, just enjoying?
I would say everything up to... So let's go back now to tandem skydiving as opposed to student training. So with a tandem skydiving where you're strapped to an instructor, I would say that up until 5 seconds into free fall, paralysis by analysis is the biggest thing that you're going to deal with. Like, people will just freeze because of what they think is going to happen. Once they're out there and reality hits, it's like, oh, right, cool. this is actually no factor. So, yeah, you see people before and you see people after. It's two different people. Literally two different people from what they were like before they jumped to what they're like after.
So now you're in this plane. You're how far up?
We jump students from 13,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So we start to get ready. So it kind of enters the... It kind of starts going live at 10,000 feet, where we do final redundancy checks on their equipment. They have a radio, so we can talk to them while the parachute's open, and we can tell them where to land and so on and so forth. We turn the radio on, and we get them to run through the skydive one more time. At that point, then, there's a series of communication that comes from the pilot that tells us we've 3 minutes to drop, we've 1 minute to drop. Everyone's doing high fives and handshakes and all this kind of stuff. And that's where they start, you know, their eyes get a little bit bigger. And then,
are they happy and looking forward to it at this point?
No, absolutely not. No. Given the choice, if you said to them, I'll give you a pass on this one, they'd take it. The majority
but
of people
don't,
would take
you
it.
Don't say that to them.
Anyone want to call this off? No, given the choice, someone on the first jump, second jump, there's that part of them, there's that bravado that says, yeah, I'm ready. like everyone, like I did. And there's that party that says, yeah, if this guy offered me a pass now. So if the weather's bad, like our guys come into the course, and if the weather's bad, then I see them secretly take a sigh of relief to be like, cool, we're not jumping today. You know, they're like, oh, the weather's bad. But secretly, they're a little bit, you know, they're a little bit kind of happy that it's not happening. And then when a door opens, that's when it gets real. When the door opens on the aircraft, everything changes, the noise changes, the pilot depowers the aircraft, so the plane slows down. There's a definitive change in what's happening. People start to exit the aircraft. The way I describe the door opening, do you remember Etch-a-Sketch as a kid, the thing you draw on and you shake it and it disappears?
Yeah.
That's like what happens to someone's brain when the door opens. So everything they were going to do and everything they plan to do, completely wiped. And they're going to go back to their default, their human nature default. And that's what we try and retrain on the ground. We try and retrain their default, which is freeze, fetal position, do nothing. We try and get them to relax, breathe, communicate. Communication's the number one thing. If I could get a student to do anything, it would be talk to me. Not physically talk to me. You can't do that in free fall, but actually communicate with me through the rest of our available language.
So it's a door, is it?
It's a door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then how do you get out the door?
You climb out the door and there's it's a three-person party, so there's an instructor on the outside of the plane. This is for the first three skydives. Yeah. There's an instructor on the outside of the plane. There's a student in
the... What do you mean on the outside of the plane?
So he climbs on the outside of the plane. There's kind of like a handle up on the top and there's a step on the bottom, so he kind of climbs out and he hangs on that. And he holds part of the student. The student kneels up in the door, so he's half in, half out the plane. And then the other guy's on the inside of the plane. The student looks at us, left first, right second, and then does what we call an exit count, where he goes up, down, and then he arches his body. We all leave at the same time. And
so what's up, down?
Up, down. So they make a movement with their body, because we can't hear anything and we really can't see too much. So they make a movement with their hips, which goes up, down, out. So like a 1, 2, 3, like 1, 2, 3, and then, you know, they exit the aircraft and... There you go.
And you've told them to be in what sort of...
We call it an arch position, which is hips forward, head back. It's quite an open, very open... If you were, you know, if you were stood up on the ground, you'd be leaning back, looking up at the sky, if you were stood up doing that with your arms out.
Okay. Like that moment in Platoon.
No! Kind of like that moment in Platoon with a little bit more 90-degree arms, but yeah, let's call it that, a little bit Platoon, yeah.
You're not really thinking about Platoon while you're doing this, though, by the way.
Not really.
Mind you, Shona says, my cousin celebrated his 95th with a tandem skydive and he flew mosquitoes during World War II.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
Pam has a question, and you have to answer honestly. She wants to know how many have you lost?
In terms of...
How many people have died?
You need a bit of... You kind of need to quantify that question a little bit, Pam, in terms of, no one that I've taken, but I've definitely been around fatalities, but no one that I've actually taken.
Okay. What happens when there's a fatality? Andrew, by the way, is listening. He says he feels terrified and he's lying on the bed at the moment.
Stay on the bed, Andrew. Don't move. Don't move.
This is sad, though.
It is. No, it is, completely. It is. And it's, you know, you kind of... You want to look at that, people say it's dangerous. And I always say with skydiving, look, it's not dangerous, it's unforgiving. If you make a mistake, then skydiving is life 500x. The mistakes you make on the ground, you will make in the air. You will do it 500 times faster with 500 times more consequence. So if you are, this is why we want to avoid those risk takers, because they're stacking the deck against themselves. So anything can happen to anyone at any point in time, but you can mitigate that risk massively. You can mitigate the risk, but if you do make a mistake, you will pay for that mistake. You make that mistake lower to the ground, you'll pay for it.
So we probably won't use names, but can you give us some mistakes that people have made that have ended up costing them their lives?
So we'll kind of go with the stats, and we'd say the biggest killer in skydiving these days is when people turn a parachute. So a parachute's like a wing. It's not like, most people think of it like a round parachute, like back in a war. So it's like a wing. It's like an aircraft wing. So when you turn the parachute, it dives towards the ground. If you turn the parachute at 5,000 feet, it will come out of that dive. If you turn the parachute at 5 feet, it won't come out of that dive. So you'll impact the ground at a speed that is generally unsurvivable. That's where the majority of people die skydiving these days. Whereas back in the 80s, it was literally... I opened the parachute and me washing flew out. It was like that back in the day. But like I say, now with the advances in equipment, it's pilot error.
Gerard says he did a couple of hundred jumps back in the barnstorming 80s.
Nice.
And he says he still gets a surge of adrenaline when he's around small planes and smells that exhaust.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of feelings. There's a lot of things that can kind of kick you into gear with that, whether it's noise or smell or sight or literally just the weather. But yeah, there's a lot of things from, you know, if you've been doing it back in the 80s as well, that's when it was legit dangerous.
Okay, so I've jumped out of the plane and now I'm free-falling. And is there a cord that I'm going to pull?
Yeah, but that's a little bit later on. So there's a sequence of things you've got to do, which is primarily communicating.
I've asked too many questions. I've only left us 4 minutes for the skydiving. That was terrible planning. So go on, carry on.
So you would look at the guy on your left-hand side. You communicate with him. He would give you things to do if you need them, which would be using hand signals. So he'd tell you to straighten your legs or arch your body more or relax. You'd look at the guy on the right. And then generally after about 45 seconds, you'd deploy the parachute, which is a really small hand-deployed pilot chute. You would grab that thing, you'd throw it out to the side. It's a really small parachute. It then starts a series of events, which opens the bigger parachute, and so on and so forth.
Why do you have the smaller chute first?
That's how parachutes deploy these days. So, you know, it used to be, pull the cord, bro. It's not anymore. Okay. That's a real old school sort of thing.
Chuck the pilot chute, bro.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so when that gets some air in it, it's got a strong enough pull to pull out the rest of your parachute.
You would hope.
Susan says, are there any medical conditions restricting people who can and can't do it?
There's a few things. Let's kind of classify this now, that if you're in the industry and you're working where you are taking people skydives, then epilepsy is a no-no.
Mm.
Well, kind of, you know, there'll be a few other things, but that's the big one if you're epileptic.
Heart conditions?
Yeah, they'd have to be, you know, a lot of the time when you're learning, that's down to the instructor's discretion, whether or not that's they're going to take you on it.
Pregnancy?
I wouldn't.
No.
People have.
Yeah. Okay, and so the parachute's out. We're having quite a good time now.
It still can be stressful, but everything's definitely slowed down. It takes you about 5-6 minutes to get on the ground. We got the radio on where we'll be kind of turn right, turn left, and we'll guide them into land and tell them what to do on landing. So as long as they follow the instructions, but invariably we'll say turn left, they'll turn right. And
you know where you're going to land when you jump out of the plane?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is quite easy. People think, oh, I won't be able. It's quite easy to see. It is quite easy to see.
Peter says, great description of skydiving by your guest. I remember an incredible feeling of relief when the chute opened on my first free fall. And then I enjoyed the silence with the birds chattering.
Nice.
Mm. And how am I landing?
Hopefully quite softly.
Am I running as I come down?
Yeah, generally. That depends on the wind. So if there's not too much wind, you'll be travelling quite fast. So we call it flaring the parachute. So as you level the parachute off and deploy and sort of hit the brakes, then you'll move forward along the ground and you'll transition that flight into a run. If it's quite a strong wind, you'll be coming straight down.
Is that sociopath teaching anywhere I should know about?
No. Okay. If he is, I'm not going to tell you.
Good luck, everyone. You must be very pleased to have this out in the world, this TV show.
Look, I always kind of say to people that there's a particular way that this sausage gets made, and this course is an incredible way for people to learn to skydive. And I'm just happy that people can see the transformation of some students that start in a particular way and finish in a particular way. It's a great thing to be able to see.
Lots of people sending me the same joke. Do you know the joke?
Go on.
If at first you don't succeed, skydiving's not for you.
That's about right.
Yeah. How many people only do one jump, asks Mike?
Quite a lot.
Really?
Thanks, Paul, but
not for me.
Yeah. Look, you know, and it's different when you go in and if you want to learn on your own, there's so many constraints, and you go and the weather's bad, and then, you know, your partner's saying, oh, don't go this weekend, we want to go and do, and it's so hard. It's so hard logistically, you know, especially in New Zealand, the weather's so up and down.
Okay, bonus to the person at TVNZ who came up with the name of the show, High School, and it's all about a skydiving instructor teaching others to become instructors. It's going to debut TVNZ On Demand end of the week and new episodes over the next few weeks. Paul Jeune, great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your time.